NRA-TV with Cam Edwards.
It's just another day. If something happens, you take care of it, and that's it.
And that's it. Cool, calm, and collected, yet that grandmother defended her grandchildren from a would-be intruder. We'll get to that story later on in the program. Good Thursday. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of Cam and Company right here on NRA-TV. It will regulate a militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And yeah, there is a whole bunch of infringement taking place in the state of California. We've got some good news to report. A federal judge has granted a temporary injunction in a case brought by the California Rifle and Pistol Association, supported by the National Rifle Association, challenging a ban on gun shows at the Del Mar Fairgrounds outside of San Diego. Yeah, this judge says that while the legality of that ban is being debated in court, gun shows can continue. Tiffany Chevron, attorney for the California Rifle and Pistol Association, as well as B&L Productions, which runs the Crossroads of the West Gun Show, said we're thankful that Judge Bencivengo sees the constitutional problem with banning these safe, perfectly legal events and is allowing the show to go on while we continue to fight. We are confident, she says, that as this case progresses, law-abiding American civil rights will not be unjustly violated and that we will prevail. This is good news. However, it has to be noted that the folks who are supporting this ban are vowing to appeal. And there is also legislation at the state level that would ban gun shows from any county property in the state of California or any state-owned property in the state of California. This is unreal. Now, keep in mind what the gun laws already are in California. Nobody, because of California's 10-day waiting period, nobody is walking into a gun store or a gun show, rather, or a gun store for that matter, plunking down their ID, filling out the 4473, going through the background check, and walking out with a firearm that same day. Nobody. And yet the objections to the gun shows from organizations like Never Again California and Assemblymember Todd Gloria are this. Todd Gloria says this injunction ignores the will of residents in the communities around the Del Mar Fairgrounds who have stated unequivocally that they do not want guns or ammunition sold on this public state-owned property. We will continue to persist with our legislation to prohibit gun and ammunition sales on the fairgrounds, and I hope the Del Mar Fair Board chooses to appeal this misguided decision. So because some folks don't want other folks exercising their constitutional rights, these elected officials, these fair board members, apparently believe that that's enough to stop the First Amendment exercise of free speech, of freedom of assembly, not to mention the Second Amendment, constitutionally protected right to keep and bear arms. But again, this is California we're talking about. And we've got more actually than just this legislation to get to, because coming up here in about, 10 days now, July the 1st, laws are changing in California. Gunmageddon, we've got more gun control resolutions that were approved by a majority of state citizens that are now going into effect. And we've been talking about this for a couple of weeks now. This is shaping up to be an absolute disaster. And gun control advocates in California, they're probably happy about that. The anti-gun politicians in California are probably thrilled that this is going to be a nightmare and the bureaucracy is getting in the way. That's not a bug. That is a feature. If the goal is fewer legal gun owners, why wouldn't you want to make it more of a burdensome process than it already is, thanks to these gun control laws? So Fox 40 in Sacramento went out to Rockland, California, talking with some folks who are purchasing a lot of ammunition ahead of this July 1st deadline that will require you to show real ID, compliant ID, before you can even purchase ammunition there in a gun store.
You know, it's bad enough that they stopped letting us order it online last year, I think it was, and now they're gonna have to, we're gonna have to register or do some kind of crazy paperwork just to come in and buy ammo for, you know, a weekend with the kids. It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. That man Jeff there, by the way, spent more than $1,000 on ammunition before these new laws go into effect on July the 1st. I want to welcome to the program right now a gentleman we first talked to almost a year ago when Borat tried to show up to his gun store and cause some shenanigans. Very pleased to have with us Norris Sweden from Warrior One Guns and Ammo in Riverside, California. Norris, how are you, sir?
Hey, what's going on? Good to see you again.
It's good to talk with you. I appreciate you taking some time. So let me ask you, first of all, what are ammo sales like this week?
It's been through the roof since June. I mean, we're selling online right now like crazy. In store, It's cleaning out my shelves. Obviously, we're used to this because every time California comes up with some genius idea to change the law, this is exactly what happens, from guns now down to ammo.
Yeah, absolutely. And I understand that there are, again, there are some things that the state is not telling you. For instance, this Fox 40 report out of Sacramento talked with the owner of Rockland Armory, a guy named Terry Fong, and he said that Cal DOJ has not told FFLs in the state whether or not this is an instant background check on the ammunition or you have to wait 5 or 10 days. So we don't even know whether or not a waiting period is going to apply for your ammo purchases on July the 1st.
That's 100% correct. We don't know how anything's going to work. We don't know the process. I have the paperwork sitting in front of me. It just tells you what you're going to need. But as far as what's the charge, how fast it's going to be, what happens if you're denied, we do not know anything. And listen, I'm going to be dead honest with you. This is all the legislators, again, in California, passing stuff and throwing it on GLJ's desk and saying, figure it out. And who's left with the burden? Consumers and owners. That's where we're left at. So I couldn't even tell you how it's going to work or how much it's going to cost.
You know, and again, those anti-gun lawmakers, they're probably okay hearing you say that. They're okay with the confusion because they're not out to make gun owners' lives any easier.
No, they want
fewer legal gun owners in California, right? So one of the other provisions that I've heard is that in order to get approved, you have to show a real ID compliant ID. Like your normal old California driver's license is not going to actually, even though it's a legal California driver's license, not going to be enough to actually pass the background check and to be able to purchase ammunition.
So exactly. So let's talk about that. So now you have somebody that has to have a real ID. The problem is the DMV is not giving out the real ID. They're making the process extremely hard and they're not even informing, hey, you need to get the real ID. So people are just going in, renewing our ID. When they come in, they're realizing, oh, wait. And listen, this happened about a year ago when they were doing it for gun purchases. And then we couldn't even sell guns. My employees would tell me, they're like, Norris, listen, we're losing customers because nobody has the real ID. I'm going to be honest with you. Finally, we're like, we called DOJ. We're like, we got to take people's ID. So they corrected the measure. They sent the correct paperwork. But let me tell you, last year, 4 gun shops went out of business. This year, I've already know of 2 that went out of business. California, plain and simple, and I don't care what anybody says, is on the track to put stores out of business. And it's working. Hands down, it's working. So all these laws and all these regulations they're passing and not giving us the correct information, that's exactly what it's for, is deter people from buying and put the store out of business.
Talking again with Norris Sweden from Warrior One there in Riverside, California. And you know, Norris, right before we got you on the program, we were talking about this victory, a temporary injunction that will allow gun shows to continue at the Del Mar Fairgrounds outside of San Diego. But again, you've got state legislation that would shut down gun shows on any state-owned property in California. I mean, I happen to think that's a clear violation of the First Amendment, but it speaks to your point here. That they're trying to get rid of, and look, each and every one of these laws is aimed at legal commerce, lawful gun owners. None of these bills are aimed at the illicit trafficking of firearms. None of these pieces of legislation are aimed at people who illegally own firearms, use them to commit violent crimes. They are going after the law-abiding, lawful gun culture in the state of California, and they're not going to stop with your state and your borders.
No. No, other states should pay attention to what California is doing. If not, it's gonna head over to your state. I mean, it's already happening in Oregon. I mean, so it's going to other states. And you know, California, every time something happens, the legislators who have probably never been behind a gun, never even shot a gun, think to themselves, oh, this is a genius idea. Let's just pass that. And unfortunately, this is what we're stuck with.
Norris, listen, man, I appreciate you coming on the program. Can you do me a favor? Can
Absolutely.
We set up an appointment right here to talk with you again, let's say July 2nd? Can we try to do that?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
All right, man. I appreciate it. We'll get together on a time. But Norris Sweden from Warrior One there in Riverside, California, it is as bad as you'd think it is going to be. And by the way, it's not just Washington State. We've been talking about what's going on, or not just California. We've been talking about what's going on in Washington State as well. You got a July 1st deadline. Initiative 1639, a lot of provisions going into effect. And again, there's been a real lack of response on the part of the state of Washington to let firearm dealers know, okay, listen, here's the new process. Here's what you got to do in order to stay in compliance with the law. I heard somebody say, and I haven't been able to confirm this, but I've heard somebody say that you won't be able to sell lowers come July the 1st. You just won't be able to sell them. Again, all of this confusion, all of the stuff that we see as flaws in the law, because if you write a law and you hope that it's going to work, that you don't want to see flaws, they're not flaws to gun control advocates. Look, eventually they might get thrown out in court, these laws, with all of these flaws written in them. But if they can get them on the books now, they can keep on the books while lawsuits are proceeding and the litigation takes place, they'll view that as a win. They really will. It's sad that that's their attitude and that's their mindset, but unfortunately, it's exactly what we're dealing with here. Coming up July the 9th, we've got a special session in the state of Virginia. Our Governor Ralph Northam calling for a host of new gun control laws. We spoke about that on the program earlier this week with Dr. Sheila Furry, who is a psychiatrist at one of these roundtables held across the state of Virginia. Well, Virginia Governor Tim Kaine is trying to take this national. He was on the floor of the Senate once again talking up the need for quote-unquote universal background check laws. And like we have seen gun control advocates do so many times in the past, Tim Kaine was referencing tragedies that would not have been prevented had universal background check laws been in place. Take a listen.
I was the mayor of Richmond when we had one of the highest homicide rates in the United States driven by gun violence. I was the governor of Virginia when the shooting happened at Virginia Tech. I was in the United States Senate when two Virginia journalists were murdered on live television.
So let's go through these in order here. The high homicide rate in Richmond, which, by the way, has declined despite the presence of quote unquote universal background checks in the state of Virginia. And then the other two instances that the tragedies that Senator Kaine mentioned, both of those individuals went through background checks. Again, this doesn't apply to Senator Kaine's preferred piece of legislation. But the only argument, I won't say the only, the best argument, according to Tim Kaine, that he has is to try to draw a comparison between these tragedies and this legislation that would not have prevented them. In South Dakota, July the 1st is a legislative deadline that gun owners are welcoming. It is the day that constitutional carry goes into effect across the state. And local media is doing sort of an explainer on how this is all going to work. Now, one thing that is absolutely true, and this goes for every constitutional carry state, is that this only applies in the state of South Dakota, as one local firearms instructor pointed out.
And it does nothing for you outside of the state of South Dakota. So it wouldn't matter if I drove to Minnesota or if I drove to Wyoming. In both states, I would still need a valid permit.
All right, I got to actually check about Wyoming, because Wyoming is a constitutional carry state. But the important thing is that this is constitutional carry within the state borders of South Dakota. This is one of the reasons why right to carry licenses typically don't drop off in states that adopt constitutional carry, because people want that reciprocity with other states. But we'll be reporting coming up the week of July the 1st on another state. This will be the 13th state. Kentucky's constitutional carry law goes into effect later this year. It might be July the 1st as well, because we're now up to 14 states around the nation that have adopted constitutional carry. There are only 8 states left that are still discretionary issues, still may issue, can still deny you for any reason or no reason whatsoever. Just 8 states where that happens. 14 states now where the Constitution is your permit to carry. One of those may issue states, and it's really a shall not issue state, the state of New Jersey, which today the lawmakers in Trenton are considering, well, let's see, the Assembly is considering 12 gun control bills. The Senate's considering 8 gun control bills. Governor Phil Murphy's actually mad at the Senate for not considering the other 4 gun control bills. He's not happy with just 8. He wants to sign every bit of gun control legislation that gets introduced in the state legislature, including this quote-unquote smart gun bill that would revise the existing law in the books. Very pleased to have with us the executive director of the Association of New Jersey Rifle and Pistol Clubs, Mr. Scott Bach, is with us on the program right now. Scott, thanks for your time today.
Hey, Cam, great to be back. And it is wild and crazy in New Jersey right now. It really is. It's, as we're speaking, the Senate and Assembly sessions are happening, and, among the hundreds of bills before the session closes, are these gun bills. I will say that out of all the bills, there are only six that we have concentrated on. There are only six that negatively affect the gun rights. There are all kinds of peripheral bills that we've made a conscious decision not to oppose. You know, there are things that either involve dealers or fund programs of interest to the government. But the six are hardcore. And, you know, we kind of know how things are going to shake out at the end of today. And, the, you know, the voting's probably going to go into the evening. It could go very late. You know, at the end of the day, there is a bit of a dispute between the two houses of the legislature as to which bills they want to move. And so while we expect all six to move in the assembly, we expect only two of the six to move in the Senate, which means four of the six are, we anticipate, are going nowhere, but two of the six are going to go to the governor's desk. And
okay. Well, let's, I tell you what, yeah, let's talk about those two that you think are going to go to the governor's desk first, since those seem to be the most important. And then we'll get back to the bills that are likely to die in the Senate. So what are the two bills that you're anticipating will actually get through both chambers of the legislature, Scott?
Well, one is the new smart gun bill, which we'll go into as much detail as you like on. The other is a technical bill that, honestly, it's well-intentioned. It's designed to punish criminals, but because of poor wording, it has potential to entrap honest gun owners in its wording, and it could be fixed with small amendments that have not yet been made. So smart guns is the big one. You know, as you recall, New Jersey has had a smart gun law since 2002, and that law is actually credited with stunting the development of smart guns nationally because, you know, the anti-gunners tip their hand with that law. That law basically says once there's a working smart gun, within 3 years, all conventional handguns are banned. You can't sell them anymore. So it's a gun ban. It's, you know, they've co-opted this technology and used it as an excuse to ban everything conventional. And so the senator who brought that bill in 2002, Loretta Weinberg, a name, you know, familiar to you and me, you know, is blamed by the anti-gunners nationally for interfering because she got too aggressive, tipped their hand, and gun owners are not interested in the smart gun now. So this new bill that it's already passed in the Senate and it will pass in the Assembly today basically takes that, it swaps one mandate for another. It removes the gun ban, okay? But instead, in lieu of a gun ban, it says if you're a dealer in New Jersey, you must carry at least one smart gun for sale. It forces market acceptance of smart guns by forcing smart guns into every dealer under, you know, threat of loss of license and criminal penalty. So, you know, what we like to say is, I mean, listen, we're opposed to the new plan. Obviously, rolling back the ban is a good thing, but you have to ask yourself, why would they do this? There's only one reason. They can't implement the ban because of the old smart gun law, so what they want to do is roll it back, force market acceptance of the technology, and then they will be back with their ban in the future. We have told legislators, listen, there are gun owners are interested in new technology. There are people who would buy five smart guns, but for the fact that the grubby hands of legislators, they've tipped their hand and told us what they want to do with it. So if they really want to see this technology develop, they believe it's some future panacea, they should be hands-off. They should just leave it alone and give the market a chance to develop naturally. But no, they can't do that, okay? So, yeah, you know, that's what we're looking at with smart guns. And
okay.
Yeah, and, you know, it's, you know, New Jersey continues to be the quote-unquote leader on that issue.
Yeah, so, and you know, it is interesting. I mean, you talk about the fact that you think New Jersey's law have sort of repelled gun owners from smart guns. There was a some research that came out by Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health not too long ago, in which one of the researchers noted that according to their studies, the individuals who will be most likely to purchase a smart gun are those who are already practicing gun safety, and they actually worried Scott, that marketing smart guns to people who are not currently gun owners would lead to more guns. And they noted that's the opposite of what they're actually aiming for. They want fewer guns. They don't want, quote unquote, smart guns or dumb guns. They don't want guns. Their idea of gun safety is don't own a gun. So, I actually wonder if gun control advocates in a couple of years anyway, aren't going to be going back to New Jersey saying, listen, stop this smart gun stuff. Don't encourage anybody to own any kind of firearm whatsoever. But for now, again, the anti-gun forces seem to be behind this in New Jersey. We've got just a couple of minutes left. Scott, what can you tell us about those four bills that Governor Murphy sure wants to get to his desk, but you think the Senate will not take up?
The Senate, they're not on the agenda. One is a safe storage bill. Of course, nobody's opposed to safe storage, but you can't have a one-size-fits-all solution. It basically says when your guns are not in use, they have to be under lock and key. That may work in Jersey City in an apartment, but it might not work on a farm in farm country in New Jersey. So there's the safe storage law. There's something that requires you to renew your firearms ID card, which may be a new concept for a lot of listeners or viewers. Okay, in New Jersey, in order to own guns, one of the credentials you need is a state-issued ID card called a firearms ID. It's good for life, and it's good for the purchase of long guns. This would require renewal of that every 4 years. It would also require mandatory training in order to own, not carry, in order to own firearms. Now, of course, nobody's opposed to training. Training is a good thing, but we're talking about a constitutional right. You wouldn't force somebody to take a public speaking course before they could speak in public and exercise the First Amendment. You shouldn't mandate training as a condition to exercise that right. So, while we support and encourage and think that training should be supported and encouraged, mandating it is where the problem is. Then there are two technical bills in the posture of what I said before, where they're well-intentioned but poorly executed, and they have the potential to trip up law-abiding gun owners. Those, honestly, could be easily fixed with the legislature apparently wants to punish law-abiding gun owners. And then, the final bill is a bill that mandates electronic reporting of gun and ammunition sales, okay, which imagine ammo sales, electronic reporting. What crime is that going to stop? Okay. Mm-hmm. It affects only law-abiding citizens because only in New Jersey, only law-abiding citizens buy guns and ammo from dealers because the hoops they have to jump through in order to do it means that those intent on criminal activity don't buy from those sources. That legislation has zero impact on actual criminals. And, it raises questions like how does more regulation of those already following the law reduce crime? Okay, so that's what's going on. It's an ugly scenario. Fortunately, the anti-gun Democrats are fighting among themselves. And, it looks like today's outcome is going to be two of the bills we're actively opposing are going to make it to the governor's desk, and the rest are going to be on hold.
All right, Scott Bach. Listen, I appreciate you coming on the program, sir, and look forward to talking again very soon. Thank you for everything you do, sir.
Thanks, Kim.
All right, Scott Bach with the Association of New Jersey Rifle and Pistol Clubs. I think I smell more litigation in the air based on what might be approved here by the legislature. Meanwhile, New Zealand has officially launched its gun buyback, allocating more than $200 million in New Zealand money, which is about $136 million U.S. Gun owners have until the end of the year to turn in their firearms. So far, according to News in New Zealand, almost 700 firearms have already been handed in. About 5,000 have been registered by owners for the police to collect. There is no registration of these semi-automatic firearms that are now banned in New Zealand. And so nobody really knows how many firearms there are. Nobody really knows how many firearms are going to get turned in, nor how much money is going to be spent, but the clock is now officially ticking. All right, let's get to our hero of the day, our good guy of the day. Hero of the day from WAAY Channel 31, a story about a woman who ended up holding an intruder at bay. That woman right there, Marsha Black, said it was just another day. She's 75 years old. She said a guy walked onto her property. She said, I walked out and said, can I help you? He said, yes, ma'am, I'd like to use your phone. Well, as it turns out, this guy named Cameron Powers had been on the run for several hours after crashing a stolen car. Marsha Black says, I was just as calm as I could be. She said, I knew what I was doing. I was in control. She talked to him from the front porch while holding a rifle. She said, I wanted to keep him at a distance. I didn't intend to kill him. I just wanted him to think that I would shoot him. And she held him there until deputies arrived. She said he feared the deputy more than he feared my rifle. He jumped up and ran zigzag right across the field. Didn't make it far before he was put in handcuffs. Allie Ruth, who is Diane's granddaughter, called 911 while her grandmother held the suspect at bay. And Marsha Black, they're protecting her grandbabies. Pretty good hero of the day, wouldn't you say? In the great state of Alabama, by the way, is where this took place. Our good guy of the day from the great state of Florida, Leesburg, Florida. In the right place, at the right time, willing to do the right thing, and having pretty good reflexes. That's what it's going to take. Officer Alex Nell stopped a runaway car right before it hit and rolled over a 75-year-old woman who had fallen on the ground. You see what happens here. The woman there trying to stop the car, didn't be able to put it in park. And Officer Nell there saw what was going on. He said, I happened to be in the right place at the right time. Bobby Reese said she was trying to stop the car from hitting a fuel pump. She says, I didn't want a fuel pump to blow at the gas station. So when the car started rolling backwards, she just started screaming, help me, somebody help me. And then couldn't do it, fell to the ground. She said, I saw the undercarriage of the car. Officer Nell threw his body weight against the rear of that Ford, brought the vehicle to a halt before Bobby Reese was injured. Then he yanked her out from behind the tire while still bracing the hatchback. And then once she was safe, he was able to put the parking brake in place and help her out. She said, had that officer not been there, the left rear wheel, she says, was just inches from my skull. And I would not be talking to you. I said that she was uninjured. Unfortunately, she did suffer a head injury, but superficial. Other superficial wounds as a result of a fall. Her husband, Al, was released from the hospital on Tuesday night because after hearing what had happened to his wife, he ended up having a heart attack. Yeah, thankfully, Al's okay. Thankfully, Bonnie Reese is okay. And Officer Alex Nell there in Leesburg, Florida, thankfully, he's okay as well. Again, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. And we thank you for being one of the many, many good guys out there. Our good guy brought to you, as always, by our friends at Odor Crusher. Cam and Company brought to you, as always, by our friends at Hornady Ammunition. That is going to do it for us on this Thursday. But we'll be back tomorrow, 5:30 Eastern Time, with all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation right here on NRA TV.